man. It's
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. We're going.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, step right up. Behind this curtain lies a ghastly concoction of delight, horror, fantasy, and terror. Your every wish is our command. Your every whimsical desire brought to life. But I'm warning you, there's always a price. Welcome to the greatest show on
And welcome back to the greatest show on earth that is Talking Terror. As always, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G, welcoming you back to this episode of the show where tonight we're talking about my film pick of the week. And it's not one that I've seen before. It's not one that I particularly like. It's a brand fucking new movie, guys. Yeah, we are talking about Festival of the Living Dead, directed by the Twisted Twins themselves, Jen and Sylvia Saska. So it's a brand new territory. I'm excited because normally when I make my picks, I pick something that I like and I want to talk about it with the boys, but brand new version territory. So I'm fucking all in tonight. And while we wait for the Dean, I'm also joined by the bold and the beautiful, the Golden Keith.
Pop my cherry, baby. What is
Yeah.
Up. Welcome to the music that was, the music that is, the music that ever will be, to the very festival itself. Welcome to tonight's episode. We love it. Welcome to Talking Terror.
And boots and pants and boots and pants and boots and pants. Yeah.
Pants, boots.
You know, it's odd because normally, like I had said, we normally talk about when I pick a movie for the week, it's usually something that I've seen before, and I'm like, you know what, I'm digging it. I want to talk about it with the boys. This one is like virgin territory where I'm like, oh shit, all right, you know, we're talking about something new. Just came out the other week on Tubi, which is a great source for horror, guys. If you don't know, you're looking at some horror movies, check out Tubi. It's amazing. So I'm excited to talk about it. It is completely free. So I'm excited to be talking about it also because it's Jen and Sylvia Saska. I adore them. But yes, and there he is, ladies and germs, the demonic Dean himself. Welcome back to the show.
Yes. Good evening to you all and to all of our loyal listeners. Yeah, I was having a tech thing here for a second, but I'm here now, and I'm ready to talk about Festival of the Living Dead.
It's new another territory, one of the,
yes, because, you know, since the original Night of the Living Dead all those years ago, there has not been a whole lot of material involving that universe, so we have a true rarity this evening.
Yeah, no. Zombie movies dropped off. Zombie TV series dropped off after George died. They just weren't around anymore. So it's something new for us to talk about, and I'm looking forward to it. Like I was telling the ghoul, like it's the Saskas. I adore them. We'll see if we still adore them at the end of the episode. I'm hoping, you know, I definitely have my thoughts. But as we kick off this episode, as usual, we got horror news. We got things we want to talk about. We actually do have a new listener, Megan from Maryland, found our show and messaged me and said that she loves it. So she said it reminds her of Last Podcast on the Left and Necronomipod, which she listens to a lot. Definitely appreciate the listen. So tell your friends, Megan. Get them on board.
Yeah, and tell your friends, Megan. Hello. And I have it. I didn't want to have to say this, but I have it on good authority that those other podcasts that they're like, you know, they don't really appreciate their fans as much as they should. I've heard that, and that's why you're in the right place now, where we take our fan appreciation very seriously. So. Make sure that you check us, as I'm sure you have, on Facebook, where you message Dark King of Horror, And check us out at Talking Terror on the Instagram as well. And you can see all kinds of fun stuff going on over there. So thank you for joining us here at Talking Terror.
She has the link. She's excited. I know she's listening live for the first time tonight. She sparked up the old joint, you know, and she's getting ready to listen in. So, yeah, toke up, enjoy it. So I'm excited to have a new listener, you know, somebody that appreciates what we do every week on Wednesdays. Very excited. But before we get into horror news with you, Dean, last week we had so much to talk about that we didn't get to two trailers that I asked you guys to watch, one being Joker 2, which I'm pretty excited for. Despite it being a musical, I don't know. It was one of those ups and downs type of trailers where I'm like, I don't know. But did you guys watch it? Did you guys check it out?
I did not watch the trailer for The Joker 2, but please do not hesitate in talking about it as much as you feel comfortable.
Well, I mean, of course I did, you know. So here, I got a quick question for you, Dean. Did you watch the first film?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Okay.
Hence why it would make zero sense for him to watch it. So it's definitely a high recommend, just in case.
Absolutely.
It's not a comic book movie, if that was what your worry was with it. I mean, listen, I know everybody, like, you know, the biggest worry I keep hearing about this is, oh, this movie's going to be a musical. Oh, this movie's going to be a musical. What are they going to do? This is terrible. Why are they going in this direction? Why are they doing that? You know, when everybody first announced that, you know, they were going to do Joaquin Phoenix as, you know, the Joker, and that it was going to be a very serious, you know, film, you know, not set in the DC universe as per, like, you know, the whole, the bigger, grander DCU, the DCEU that was going on with Zack Snyder's films and all of that, that, you know, we were not getting that version of the Joker, but instead, you know, that that they were going to approach it differently, and that Todd Phillips was going to be our director, you know, working with a screenplay from Scott Silver and Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
You know, I remember you, King, being very excited when you first started seeing bits and pieces of the trailer. You know, we had what looked like, instead of, like, you know, the Gotham City that we know of from, like, the Batman films, you know, and the Batman TV series, we had something that looked very, very familiar. We had something that looked like 1980s New York. We had something that looked like, you know, like Taxi Driver New York, this chaotic city that we were, like, you know, unleashed within. And this was coming just from, like, the trailer, you know? And I remember excitement building on, you know, this possibly being a very dark and serious take. And the film ended up delivering in spades. It was fantastic. Joaquin Phoenix's performance was masterful. You know, the film itself delves into the psyche. Like I said, we did a special episode on it. And,
yes, we did.
You know, it's one of those films in which, you know, like I like to say, you know, it's an unreliable narrator. You know, ultimately you watch this film and you're really not even sure if whatever you saw happen within the film actually happened, because realistically it all could be happening within the mind of an insane man. And again, like I said, all I keep hearing about is like, oh, well, it's a musical, and, you know, I don't like musicals, and I get that. A lot of people don't. I, you know, for one, I do enjoy musicals. So I don't have a problem with it being a musical. You know, we have the same people coming back. Todd Phillips is directing again. It's written by the same two people. So there's nothing that is in the formula at this point that really worries me, because I have a feeling that, you know, what we possibly have is once again a very unreliable narrator, because he's very fucking crazy. And why would it not be something within his wheelhouse to formulate a world around him that is full of music. And it doesn't look like it's trying to be one of these, like, new age musicals or anything like that. This is very much rooted still in that, like, that 1980s Andrew Lloyd Webber type of, like, hey, this is the city, and we're going to do it our way. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it's going to be. And I just have this feeling that this is going to be another solid movie. And I feel like the trailer is kind of showing that. You know, even the little bits of Gaga are showing that she's, again, we're not getting, what's her face, is Harley Quinn, you know? We're not getting that variation of Harley. Margot Robbie, which, again, everybody loves. Everybody, you know, I just feel like it's Margot Robbie doing Margot Robbie. Is never a problem. I like her Harley Quinn. You know, I definitely don't need a whole Harley Quinn movie at all. You know, she's a very pretty lady. She looks really cute when she does things. She does all kinds of zany stuff and then smiles about it, which is the silly, crazy Harley Quinn anti-hero that she has become. That's not the Harley Quinn that I want to see in this movie. That's not the Harley Quinn that I think they're going to give us. Just like they gave us this dark Joker, you know, we're going to see somebody who is also mentally deranged, if arguably she even exists. So, again, like I said, like, I think this is just one of those where it really could go so many different directions that I'm like, I'm totally, totally, I'm all in. I'm all in on this one. So I am looking forward. I think it's September. September is coming out.
It's September, yeah. Yeah, I completely resound everything you just said. I watched it, and I was like, I know it's a musical. I don't like musicals, but at the same time, the trailer just fucking got me. I love the fact that they are making Harley a patient in Arkham. She's not a doctor. She's not obsessed with the Joker. She's a patient. And I love the fact that Joaquin Phoenix has that line in the trailer where he's like, I'm not alone anymore. Like, this is what it's all about. And I was like, yeah, like, that's – but are you not alone anymore? Like, yeah, like you had said, Ghoul, like, you know, this could be all in his fucking head. When they showed the bits in the trailer with the Joker and Harley show where, you know, it's like a whole musical act, I was like, you know what? I actually think I might be behind this movie. Like, you know, I was like, it seems just perfect. And I'm hoping that it kind of plays out that way. But just to see Joaquin Phoenix back in that character, like, he just fucking owned it. He made it his own. You know, where Jared Leto failed, Joaquin Phoenix picked back up, and he's like, I got it. Like, you know, I know what I need to do.
Again, I don't necessarily fault Jared Leto. I wanted to like his Joker. I wanted to I feel like what he was given to work with was just very poor material. You know, he was shoehorned into the Suicide Squad movie, you know, just to kind of to fill in the blanks for Harley and like, hey, we need to throw something in here to really get people in the seats. I know. Let's finally introduce our Joker. And then, you know, like we really never get a full version of him. And I do feel like, you know, I think honestly, the best potential we saw was in Zack Snyder's freaking, you know, cut of Justice League in the cut scene that was played at the very end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever watched
that.
That
was where he was like, Jesus? Yeah, that was the four-hour
version, but you got to get all the way to the end where, Batman is existing in the world in which Superman is worshipped like a god, and Joker is kind of like, you know, like, hey, man, we need to fix this. And you know it's bad if Batman and Joker are going to need to, like, work together, you know? So, and sorry, let me just correct that. It's October 4th, 2024 will be the release date.
Okay, October 4th. Okay, so moving on from that, Dean,
real quick,
did you watch the Maxine trip? Go ahead.
Real quick, why do you not like musicals, King of Horror?
I never liked the theme of having a movie where, like, songs just break out. Like, I never liked it. I never appreciated it. I'm like, why? Like, I'm watching a movie, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, let's have a song. Let's have a dance. I'm like, it's too whimsical for me. Like, it's just too much. Like, even Grease, like, it's just too much. Like,
the King of
Hearts, you know, hey,
it's
we're
not
having
like
a
musical.
I don't like, well, you guys know this. I don't like whimsy. I fucking hate whimsy. I don't like it. It's fucking bad. Like, I don't enjoy it.
All musicals are whimsical. Have you ever seen, like, Les Mis, Phantom of the Opera, stuff like that?
Didn't we watch Phantom of the Opera for the program?
Version. But that's not a musical version. Yeah, the original 1929 version of Phantom of the Opera is not a musical. It's a horror movie. So the remakes that came out afterwards of Phantom, nope, not a fan. Just don't like it. I don't like it when you have a scene of two characters and they're talking and all of a sudden it's like, we have to break out into a song. Why? Like, why can't we have a musical where people are like, why the fuck are you singing right now? I don't think that's ever happened. Maybe it has, and I just haven't seen it, but I'm like, yeah. Like, can't there be a musical movie where somebody's like, why are you singing right now? Like, this is kind of bad. But I have not seen it.
There's been sarcastic takes on musicals, man. I mean, I think you would love you like the South Park movie, and that's a musical.
Hated those fucking things.
God, King, how are we friends? Sometimes I really do wonder. The Book of Mormon is fucking genius. Also written by Trey, I think, or Matt,
yes,
one of them.
Yes.
I know one of them wrote it.
Yeah, I can't take it. I hate it. Like, there was that one episode of South Park where it was like the musical episode where, you know, the boys were like, oh, we should start a boy band. And, like, you know, because that's what it's all about, like High School Musical. And I was like, see, that made me fucking laugh. Because, like, that's actually accurate. Like, why the fuck are you singing right now? Like, what? Like, Stan was confused the entire time when they brought out songs. I'm like, yeah, that's me. Like, I don't like it. I'm just always like, oh, God, fucking songs. Like, you know, it's too much. So I'm hoping Joker 2 doesn't feel... Yeah, you did, because that's been a fucking note for me, and I just don't like musicals. I don't like whimsy. I just like movies. You know? Give me something that I can actually watch. Yeah. I don't.
Well, with that
and you guys know this.
With that being said, yeah. I have a mm-hmm. pretty good idea of what my next pick is going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be High School Musical 3. You're going to pull a fucking ghoul. You're like, I'm going to start right in the middle. I mean, we did cover Bring It On, Cheer or Die, which is awesome.
The Dean typically picks horror movies, or at least somewhat horror movies.
If they're from Korea or Japan.
He has never...
What was that one that was like a pseudo-musical, I think? Did I pick one that was like an Asian pseudo-musical one?
Did you?
Did you? Maybe.
You took a lot of Asian
fucking
movies.
What was it? I think I can, like, picture the...
What I mean is, though, is that, like, you know, he's never gone into the realm of, like, me or Monkey, where, like, we're just like, hey, we're not going to pick a horror movie this week. We're just going to go with, like, what we felt like watching.
Yeah, like, fucking Lord of the Rings, the extended cut, which I'm fucking terrified you're going to pick one of these times.
Just wait. 4 hours and 13 minutes of Frodo and Sam just walking to a volcano.
Just waiting for them to jerk each other off.
You know what? You'll get to see the Witch King of Angmar. You'll get to see some heavy-duty Peter Jackson Weta effects, man. Like, yeah, you can see all kinds of, like, horror-esque influence stuff. But ultimately,
here it is.
You're going to see a wizard. You're going to see a wizard, King.
A wizard.
The white wizard.
Lost to see the wizard. Yes, we covered from my
pick,
from Kashi Miike, we watched The Happiness of the Katakuris.
Oh, my God. Yep, we did. Wow. The Happiness of the Katakuri. Wow.
We did watch
I
that.
I think I erased that from my fucking mind.
I
yeah,
remember
that was
the
a
name.
Musical.
I don't remember the movie.
I vaguely remember the movie too. There was songs, little features. There was like a stop motion animation sequence. It was fucking bizarre, man.
It was something fucking else. Yeah, no. I mean, like, but at the same time, like, it's weird because I love Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I'm fucking weird. I don't know.
I hate that
I
movie.
Love Rocky Horror.
I
love
hate
it.
That movie.
You hate Rocky Horror?
I love it.
Why
do you hate Rocky Horror?
Because it's just never, ever. And, yeah, the Dean knows this. Like, I have tried. I have tried multiple times. You know, the first time I ever actually watched that movie all the way through was when we had to cover it for this show. Like, I just can never I can never get through the movie. It does not hold my attention enough. I really don't find many of the songs, like, entertaining at all. I don't know. There's something about that movie that is just annoying. Now, the one thing I will say is this. I do want to do one of those, like, big productions in a theater just to, like, watch it from that perspective and see the whole crowd.
Have you never
acted? I've never made it to the movie in full, except for when we watched it for this show. But I do feel like that's something to do at least once, just for the shits and giggles and fun of it. But again, for the most part, I find that fucking movie irritating. Like, I don't understand the love that movie gets. And I never have.
No, I mean, that's you, man. But, yeah, you have to go to a fucking live performance when they're playing it, because they do one every year in Lancaster, where I'm from, and it's fucking wild. Like, people dress up. There's audience interaction. Like, you get into it. At the same time, I've always been in the
Rocky
Horror.
They do it a couple places around here. They do it. I think Freehold does it at some point of the year, and, you know, they do. I think they do something at Brookdale again at another point of the year. So I'll keep my eyes open for it, and, you know, I'll have all the intention to go see it. Now, whether that'll happen or not, I don't know.
And then you won't.
And then I won't. But, yeah, you know, I will think about it heavily and consider it mightily. Maybe I will. Maybe
mightily.
Finally the year that I do it.
You'll consider it, and then you'll be like, nah, I'm just going to stay home and play fucking Baldur's Gate 3. You know, it's
no,
one of those
I've
fucking
been playing
nights.
Helldivers 2 as of late. You know what I mean? I get there, I get
Helldivers
my, 2. I, Helldivers 2. I'm doing my part to help spread democracy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We knew we could count on you.
I know.
So, yeah. Dean, I wanted to go into this one as well. And Megan just brought up a good point. Sweeney Todd. I do like Sweeney Todd. Like, I actually did like the Johnny Depp
movie.
Demon
Barber, bitches.
I fucking liked it, man. Like, again, not a fan of musicals, but if you get me with the right kind of theme, I'm in there. Like, you know, Sweeney Todd is a good one. The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. But Dean, I wanted to ask you if you had a chance to check out the Maxine trailer.
I did watch the Maxine trailer.
Here we go.
Interesting, too, because don't you hate Tim Burton? Are you the one that's not a Tim Burton fan? Oh, okay.
Monkey hates Tim Burton.
I knew one of the two of you did not like Tim Burton. So, sorry. Sorry for making that
mistake. Yeah, no. Monkey fucking hates Tim Burton. Like, if you bring up Tim Burton in the conversation, he will tell you line by line why he fucking hates Tim Burton. He's like, this is exactly why I'm like, God damn, man. Like, he's good, though. Nope. This is why I hate him. Like, he will go on for like an hour about why he fucking needs
to. Sorry, Dean. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's
so.
Case, by all means, we're here for conversation. Conversation goes in many different directions.
So, with that being said, I know that the Ghoul watched Maxine trailer. I watched it too. I want to go to you, Dean, because you said you watched it. What did you think about it? Like, are you excited? Or are you kind of like, no, not for me?
No, I mean, look, I don't. I wouldn't categorize this as not for me, nor would I categorize it as excited. I would put it more towards the excited direction. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I feel that the trailer did a pretty good job of capturing that 80s vibe, which sometimes, I think in most of the time when it comes to film, when people try to do the 80s, it often comes off as like silly or inauthentic, even if the look and the music and everything is right. I don't find that very often movies are able to capture the true vibe of what the 80s were like in an authentic manner. I like that one that we watched that was my pick being an example of that, with the amusement park. She goes back in time, totally killer.
Totally killer, yes.
You know, that being just one example. So I thought the vibe of this one looks good, and the story, you know, continues, and, you know, I'll be looking forward to checking this one out.
I get exactly what the D's trying to say with that too, with trying to do 80s movies. You know, it's like a bad joke whenever they really go that route, because it's almost like they just always need to do like the stereotyped idea of like what the 80s were, with all this Dayglow shit. And, you know, like I know Dean, I'm sure, is very similar to me. Like, I think of the 80s and I think of wood paneled fucking walls. I think of, you know, hair that was really high with a lot of fucking hairspray in it. You know what I mean? I don't think, I think of like little things. I think of bangle bracelets, right? But like, I don't think of bangle bracelets, people wearing Dayglow fucking knee high socks and multicolored fucking outfits all over. No, I just think about the girls in my school that wore bangle bracelets because they were. I think about all the little keychain charms that they used to like collect and stuff like that. But again, for the most part, everything was like regular fucking covered. Most of the shit I remember my friends wearing were made out of jeans, jean jackets, jean fucking pants. You know, shirts with like shitty stripes that your parents bought for you because you never got anything cool when your mom fucking took you shopping at Kmart. You know what I mean? You were lucky if you had a shirt with a little fucking Izod alligator on it. And you were like, ooh, I got something like neat. Or like, hey, my mom went to the Gap. Look at this baggy shit that I got to wear this time around.
Yeah. Parachute pants or OP or Hobie. But sorry. That was more early 90s, I believe.
Yeah, sure.
Which was what? What, the Gap?
No, the Z Cavarici pants.
Oh, no. Again, see, coming out of Staten Island, we moved here in 1990, 88, 89. Z Cav.
Yeah, that probably sounds right, too.
All that's that's transition point. Late 80s, early 90s. Hyper color shirts, like that's whenever I see stereotypical, like that whole 80s thing, like for me, like the most colorful thing I think about are the muted colors of like a hyper color shirt that really never fucking worked right anyway. You know, it never looked anywhere near as fucking cool as it did on TV. I think about failed toys, pogo ball. Okay, who here remembers the fucking pogo ball? You know, how's that for stupid fucking invention that sold a whole lot of shit? The only reason I think of that is because that shit, like, came up on my fucking phone the other day, and, like, I pulled it out to show Sam, and I'm like, look at the stupid shit that I had as a kid. You know, I love when they try to make it look like we had such cool toys. Here's a fucking round disc that we stuck a fucking ball through. Gave you a commercial that made kids look like they were jumping, like, 5 and 6 fucking feet in the air as if they're doing cool skateboard tricks. Man, you're lucky you got fucking 6 inches off the ground on that fucking thing. I wasn't a fat kid. You did all the work. The ball didn't bounce for shit. You just needed to be able to jump, and you could do that without the fucking ball. So yes, I was happy to see, as far as this show goes, it's kind of giving you that somewhat of a muted version of that hyper color activity. It looks like it's dirty LA. And that, again, like I said, that reminds me of like the Valley Girl movie, stuff like that.
That's good.
Obviously, I got vibes of Boogie Nights, you know, with the whole fucking I'm going to be a star fucking thing, you know, with obviously some kind of violence / horror, you know, taint to it. I think it'll look
taint.
It looks like fun. I still have taint. I still have not seen the Pearl, so I do need to watch that one, and then I will make my way into the world of Maxine.
I just want to say real quick, as we're talking about that 80s thing, there was a movie from a few years ago, and it was probably fucking 10 years ago by now, like a small movie with what's his name? The Zombieland guy. What was his name?
Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart
called Adventureland.
Adventureland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Adventureland, that takes place in like the mid to late 80s, and I felt that one did a pretty decent job of kind of capturing the 80s vibe.
Yeah, basic clothes, regular people, and fucking normal conversation. Not people being like, yeah, we're going to totally like go over here today, and we're going to... Like even like, I grew up in a household with a bunch of teenage women, okay? All of my aunts, because my mother had me so young, like my aunt Jackie is only 10 years older than me. You know what I mean? So like, she's 16, 17, 18 years old when I'm living with her, and she's going out, and she's dating all these guys. They're listening to Madonna, and like I said, Aquanet, all over the place. They're not joking when they show fucking chicks with, like, fucking hair that was, like, up to the fucking moon. Like, that was a real fucking thing. But again, the multicolored clothes, the weird fucking ways of talking and shit like that, no. They sounded exactly like New Yorkers sound now. Fucking lots of attitude, a whole shit ton of cursing, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And I did see Pearl in the theaters, and I own a copy on DVD. Of course I do, because I always buy physical media. That movie is more of a character study than anything else. And it's not X. Like, I think X is like the high point. Pearl is kind of like, all right, let's see what Pearl was doing back in 1918. And it's very much a character study, very much a slow burn, like Ty West likes to do. But seeing the Maxine trailer, like, you know, everything that you guys have said is absolutely correct. But also, I got heavy, heavy Lucio Fulci, Dario Argento vibes. Like, this movie feels like it's going to be a giallo, you know, where you have Richard Ramirez, but you also have Maxine in the 80s. I love the Kevin Bacon character showing up where it's like Chinatown with Jack Nicholson, where he's like this sweaty fucking detective. I was like, oh my God, like Ty West is going to make a fucking American giallo. Like, and I'm looking forward to it because it seems like he's going back to the gritty fucking sweaty, you know, porn that he was doing in X. So I was so excited to see that in the trailer. I was like, this has fucking potential. And plus I love Mia Goth. I know you guys aren't really big on her, but I think she's great. Even though she doesn't have eyebrows.
Leave her fucking lack of eyebrows out of it, man. That's mean. Her eyebrows got nothing to do with it. Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with Mia Goth. I haven't seen anything yet that has wowed me. But yeah, I like X. You know,
really?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I did. But, like, she's not, like, the...
Did you see Infinity Pool?
No, you know what? I have not seen Infinity Pool yet. I meant
you
to
need
see
to.
That in theaters.
Yeah.
I know. You said it's all about cum and fucking drippy shit all over the place.
Piss and cum and blood, yeah.
Piss and cum. And you know what? I was like, shit, I was legitimately excited about it. I meant to go see it in theaters, and then I just never, ever got to it. And yeah, you know, like, even this past week, I'm like slacking on my A-list. I went and I saw Civil War on Thursday. And then I just have not used the pass yet this week. And Civil War, I have to say, was anybody going to see it?
A lot of mixed reviews on that one.
It's not a big – well, I didn't dislike the movie, but I did have a bit of a review forthcoming from a friend of mine prior to me going to see it. So I kind of knew what I was walking into, whereas he didn't. You know, I think a lot of people thought this was going to end up being like a big, like, war movie spectacle type of deal. Like, I kind of said to everybody from the start, this is A24, so I did have a feeling that this was going to be a more character-driven movie than it was big-budget spectacle. I know it was an expensive movie for them to make. It was a $50 million movie. But, again, like, it's not like... Again, it's very character. It's very muted. The war is the background more than it's the focus. It's the easiest way to say it without saying it. We've got some things coming up soon, man. I got Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, a whole bunch of shit. I do have to say they did that scene. They fucked up a little bit this past week, I think. They have that screen unseen thing that they do where you can go pay $5 bucks. You don't know what the movie's going to be. It was a PG-13 rated movie. I didn't go. like last minute, I was kind of like, I'm not feeling it, didn't want to do a 7 o'clock film. I'm glad I didn't, because apparently they decided to screen Spy X Family, which is like a Japanese language anime cartoon movie from a, like, I guess a manga series. Very niche film. You know what I mean? Like, your audience for that is a very select audience. Not something that you wanted to put out there to, like, you know, the mainstream people and be like, hey, come see this surprise movie that might be, that's a movie that's going to be coming out in a few weeks, and then pop that on them. You know, I'm in a group that that kind of follows and keeps up with it. They play guessing games, like what movie's going to come out. And the amount of people that were like, yeah, we gave that like 20 minutes and we walked the fuck out, were like, yeah, kind of get it. Pissed a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, and I know that Waiting Out the Devil comes out on Shudder on Friday, so I'm going to be watching it as soon as I can. Like, I'm so excited. I know, Ghoul, you talked about it, and I'm like, oh, man, like, you fucking loved it. So for you to love it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to fucking adore this movie. So
there we go. So,
it,
hey, I could say it right now. Coming out Friday. Dean, are you with us next week?
I believe so, yes.
All right, then that's my pick.
Oh, shit. Are you picking Waiting Out the Devil? Oh. Fuck yeah, dude. I'm so fucking,
yeah.
I am right, so fucking there, man.
About that. And I'm
late night the devil.
We're already into April, but as I have said so far for this first part of the year, this is my year of watching shit, and I finished all the shows I've been watching, and I did start something, but it's only a few episodes that is a kind of prelude to The Wire, because I watched the entirety of The Wire, and that just wrapped up a week ago. And then I just watched the final season of Letterkenny. So my slate is clear, and I'm really looking forward to Late Night of the Devil. And that hits today, or that hits Friday? When does that hit Shudder?
Friday. Late Night. The 19th.
Right, the 19th. All right, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that big time.
Yeah, me too, because I had said last week I wanted to make it my pick because I'm looking forward to it. It might be number one. I mean, I don't know. Like, Immaculate for me right now is, like, number one. So it's going to be hard to beat because Immaculate fucking hit me in all the right fucking spots. I still have to see The First Omen, so I might go see that this weekend. But, yeah, I was like, God, Immaculate, though.
I won't lie, I was entertaining Immaculate for my pick, except that I don't want to have the Dean have to seek it out or try to buy it or something.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been on movies anywhere, so it's like I could not spend the money and then him not be able to see it. So.
And I know it's on streaming right now. You can get it on video on demand, but yeah, no, I get that. But yeah, Immaculate. Yeah, made me a fan of Sydney Sweeney, I'll tell you that much. I was like, okay, I'm on board. Yeah, definitely one of those. And I need to see The First Omen, so I might go see that on Sunday.
All right.
Anyway, but yeah, Late Night of the Devil.
Yeah, as I'm looking
Friday
right now.
Shudder.
Yeah, the Immaculate, you know, online rental is still at $9.99 when that drops.
Which
like,
isn't
a little
bad.
Bit, no, not at all, not at all.
Yeah,
and I would happily pay that for something that I was like, oh man, I really got to see this.
Oh yeah,
100%. That it's on now. So I will be like, I'm not opposed to spending the money to rent something if we need for the show. So.
Well, and it's one of those things where it's also kind of like good that they're actually kind of reducing the price of these rentals. Like $9.99 isn't bad, but like last year when these movies would come home on video on demand, it was like $19.99. The fucking rent and shit. It's like, God damn. I'll just wait for it to come out on DVD.
I think most of the time the rentals were that much was when the movie was still in the theater. I think that was like one of the specific things
right.
for that.
You might be right, yeah. That's
which I know Immaculate is still in theaters, but I do think because of a, you know, obviously with other releases coming out now, we're starting to hit the point of the season where some of the bigger movies that are upcoming are about to make their releases. I think they know that, like, you know, they're dwindling down as far as the attention coming to the film.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure you're right about that. But yeah, I was surprised to see Immaculate still in theaters because I saw it the week when it was $6.66. I was like, I can't miss that. It's fucking amazing. Hail Satan. But
You know what?
But, yeah,
I take it back. I just looked on my list, and it is
okay.
It's still on AMC's site, but there are no show times in any of, like, the local theaters.
So it's phasing out, obviously, but as it should. You know, because usually they give it a couple weeks and then it phases out.
Yeah, get
but,
out of
you
here.
Know, yeah, you know, we got to make room for fucking Deadpool 3 and the popcorn buckets.
Well, no, I know that those popcorn buckets aren't real. Okay, they're not real. Fuck my face, popcorn buckets. So that
really they're
total
not.
Mock-up.
Oh, I was kind of hoping they were.
It's a total mock-up by a website. I mean, come on now, Disney is willing to be a little risque. Supposedly, the buckets will be somewhat R-rated, according to Kevin Feige or whatever the fuck his name is.
Kevin Feige.
From what I can tell, I thought I saw what might have been a slip for it. It looks like there will be popcorn buckets, and you get one of two head toppers. Like, they're large caps that go over the buckets. One looks like a Wolverine helmet. The other looks like a Deadpool helmet. I think the big thing, though, that's the risque thing. I think you get your cup, and there's like a cup top that looks like it's a twirl up of shit.
Okay. Interesting. But either way, I'm looking forward to seeing that. But all right, Dean, what are we talking about tonight for horror news? What do you got for us?
So, first up, fan favorite of the King of Horror, Joe Bob Briggs, has teamed up with Dark Horse, which most of the time produces comics, but Joe Bob Briggs has signed a 2-book deal with Dark Horse. The first of these books is going to be a new reprint of Joe Bob Briggs Goes to the Movies, I'm sorry, Goes to the Drive-In, which is going to feature all of his original film reviews. And then the second of the titles in this book deal, he has been writing and working on for several years what he is calling the entire backstory of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He says that he has interviewed every single person that was in the cast and crew, and that his behind the scenes making of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre book will be the definitive making of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre book. No release date available at the time.
Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I know he's steeped in Texas Chainsaw lore, but, you know, Mucky can confirm when we met him at Creature Feature a couple years ago. Yeah, he pretended like he wasn't even in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. He didn't have that cameo. I think he was just fucking tired when I met him, and he just didn't want to talk to me because I kept asking him about that cameo, and he's like, yeah, I don't know. Thank you, Joe Bob. Thank you for ruining everything. So I've never forgotten that. Like, I want to forget it because I support him being on Shudder and having the last drive-in, but I'm like, no. Like, has that
I know
ever
I keep reminding
you.
You.
Like, have you ever met anybody? Like, have you ever met, like, a celebrity where you're like, nah, like, that sucks. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like it just happened to me.
Because
I remember, you met Tom Savini, and he was a fucking dick that day we met him. I was like,
God. Totally in a shit mood, and, yeah, he was, like, just fucking, yeah, total dick. Total dickhead, man. Total disappointment. Really, and, like, you know, that is how I picture him. And, like, I know you've told me that he's cool, and, you know, I've heard from other people that he's cool, and it was like, nah, man, he was a dick that day.
Yeah, I was so fucking disappointed when we met him at Bizarre AC1, and he was just kind of a dick. Like, he just didn't really fucking feel like talking to us, and we asked him about the Friday the 13th thing, about Jason being alive during the first one. He's like, I don't know, like, maybe, but no, like, he wasn't.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
no, that's
when I met you a couple years ago,
like,
you were so nice.
He's like, nah. He's like, he's dead. And that's just it, you know? Jason was never alive. It was just his mother. I'm like, oh, okay, bro. Sorry.
I know. Because when I met him years ago, he was so nice, and he was like, look at all these things that I made, and thank you so much for appreciating my art. And then when I took you to meet him, I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to be so nice. And he's like, yeah, I don't fucking want to be here. But thankfully, you know, John Cassier had the fucking, you know,
aww,
the MVP of that fucking weekend where he was so fucking nice to us.
I love John, man. Every time I see him at any fucking convention, you know, he's always just so, so fucking sweet. He's such a nice guy. I love any success that that man gets because he so deserves it.
Oh, 100%. Like, I love the fact that we walked him back to his table and he was like, no, I'll do a free spot for you because you have a podcast, right? Like, I was like, that's amazing. But all right, then what else are we talking about?
We are talking about how Brad Dourif says that he is officially retiring from acting. But
whoa,
he says, no, slow down. Don't get
so
worried.
He can still do voice acting.
Yeah, shh. We're going to get it.
Oh,
he's
so,
gonna get
Brad
it.
Dourif
sorry,
says
am I,
he
am I
retired.
Guessing what you're going to tell us?
He says that the one exception will be that he will continue to work only on Chucky projects for Don Mancini.
Okay. So, retiring from acting, but he hasn't really done anything outside of Don Mancini Chucky project. So it's kind of like, all right, cool. You know, he is on this current season of Chucky. The episode premieres tonight at 10 o'clock, our time on the East Coast. But, yeah, man.
Our time.
I guess that's cool.
It's our time down here.
It's our
down
time.
Here. I think I'm the only one caught up on Chucky, you know, the TV series.
You are.
But it's well worth a shot. Chucky is dying in the current season, like the second half of Chucky season 3. He is literally gray-haired, looking like he's just on death's door. So it's going to be interesting
not
to see what
gray,
they do with the
not
character.
Not just gray hair, but like balding, like cancerous-ridden looking. Like I've seen trailers for it. And I'll be honest, the trailers have sparked my interest enough to where I might actually check it out this weekend.
I hope you do, because like this season has been fucking great. Like the first couple episodes that they had last year, now they're moving forward the second half of season 3. Like it's been fucking great. Like it's just a lot of fun. It's the White House. It's Devin Sawa as the president. They're just doing a lot of fun things. Like season 2 was okay, but I felt like they focused a lot more on Tiffany and the Jennifer Tilly character. I'm like, it's too much. Like, just bring it back to Chucky. And that's what they're doing. So if you do check it out, you have to let me know. Because I'm completely caught up. Like, I'm all caught up on Chucky, and I definitely want more. But, yeah, if Brad Dourif is retiring from acting, great. And if he wants to work on Don Mancini projects, great, too. Because, you know, what an iconic character that Chucky is. You know, the fact that we're getting,
you know,
Chucky in 2024.
Yeah, and, you know, not, I mean, sort of related a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just being that Chucky, like, of horror movies having a TV series. If you think back, and this goes back several years, I think it was originally, I think it was originally for the WB, maybe, that were making a Swamp Thing series, and they did the season of it, and then it was canceled. They maybe didn't even air the whole season, but the word was that maybe it was also, like, not bad, like it might have actually been pretty good.
It was
I
fucking
been
awesome,
quite,
actually.
The Swamp Sorry. Thing series?
Yeah, well, you
it
know
really
what,
good.
If I can, I can interject and give you just a slightly better explanation about it. So the Swamp
oh, please
Thing
do.
Series, right? I will, just so we can correct all of these things. So the Swamp Thing series that you're speaking of, right, didn't originally come out on WB. It was released on
CW.
Well, it was the CW at that point. But originally, before that, it was released on
DC's own streaming service. They had started a streaming service prior to Disney Plus and all of that stuff. It was called the DC Universe. You could, by having a subscription to the DC Universe, you could access all of DC comic books and read them, like, on your phones and stuff like that. They had a bunch of TV series. They tried to do an all-in-one type of deal. They had the Titans television series. And the thing is, because they didn't have these on network television, characters could curse. Characters, it was very R-rated material, including the Swamp Thing series. Ooh, they said naughty words. You know, but listen, like we're both fans of Stern, you know what I mean? Like, he says all the time, it's fucking ridiculous that in the year 2024 that people are paying for cable fucking television and they still bleep out shit. We watch wrestling on a weekly fucking basis, and do you know when the crowd starts chanting if they say bullshit, bullshit, bullshit? You got to fucking sit there and listen as they blank out the fucking sound because you can't hear people in a live audience on television say shit on a fucking channel that you pay to watch. This ain't broadcast fucking rabbit ear antenna television anymore. I understood it when it was free, where anybody could see it, so I guess we have to watch what we're saying. But like he says all the time, what the fuck are we paying for, and yet you guys are fucking censoring it by your choice? Fuck you! Like, give me a break!
Yeah,
eat my fucking
ridiculous.
my big fucking half-black dick right there, boom, right down your throat. Anyway, my point is, though, is that this series of Swamp Thing, which was one season, was phenomenal. Dean, you would actually really like it. Premiered on that DC Universe. They did, after it was canceled, they moved it to the CW just to give it airtime. They tried to air it, that's all.
Yeah.
Nobody saw it.
I knew it was something like that. But my point of bringing this up, and this was not even on my news list, but today, when I put on Festival of the Living Dead, it's been quite some time since I've opened Tubi, and it just so happens when I opened up Tubi, right on the home screen when it opened up, you know, in my app, was letting me know that the Swamp Thing series is now on Tubi. And I remember having done several stories about the Swamp Thing series leading up to its release, and I'm a fan of Swamp Thing and had always wanted to see it, so I just wanted to say that if you had or had not seen it and didn't know where to watch it or had forgotten about it, that the Swamp Thing series is now on Tubi. I will be looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, put it on your list, man. Derek Mears is great at Swamp Thing. So that was a great series. I was sad to see it go.
I hope it's uncensored, too. I hope it's the version that ran on the DC Universe.
I have a picture of that guy choking me.
You do.
Derek Mears.
He was a great Jason. And we talked about that on the show. That 2009 Friday 13th was great.
Fucking guy is such a total sweetheart. He's such a pussycat in real life, man. Really, really such a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, Kane Hodder is too, to a certain extent. And, of course, Steve Dash from Friday 2 when we got to meet him. Cool. Putting that machete right up to your throat.
Fucking sharp.
Hey, come on,
over here. Fuck, too. It was so sharp. I was legitimately frightened, man.
Rest in peace,
I love
Steve that Dash. Picture. Where you look like you're scared. One of my favorite pictures. And then, of course, when Michael Berryman and Kane Hodder fucking both choked you. Right? No, we got to get both. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know, I've noticed this, like, a pattern in my life in which, like, pictures get taken of me, and they're, like, always of, like, the worst possible, like, angle moment or, like, in that picture where I have both Kane and fucking Michael Berryman choking me, like, I look like a gigantic fat-faced frog. And I get it. Kane is fucking, you know, Kane is busy choking me with, like, you know, the force that he fucking chokes you with. You feel like you got a Darth Vader grip on your fucking neck, and he's doing it extra hard because he's showing Berryman how it needs to be done. You know, because it wasn't good enough to be like, oh, Berryman puts his hand on my throat. He's like, no, no, no. If you're gonna do it, you gotta do it like this, and fucking proceeds to like squeeze, and it's like, oh, dude, come on, man, cut me a little slack.
Yeah, I know. He's like this, Kane? He's like, yeah, like that. your fucking tongue popped out of your mouth. Like, yeah, it was. I was like, oh, good.
Fucking
only came to me. But all right, Jim, what else are we talking about?
The to commemorate the 45th anniversary, Alien will be returning to the movie theater for a one-night screening nationwide on April 26th. So about a week and a half from now. And, well, maybe, no, I'm wrong. Let's, less than a week. Anyway, April 26th, Alien will be returning to be shown across the country, and there will be, it will be preceded by an interview between Ridley Scott and Fede Alvarez. So that will all be shown in the theater. And also in the world of Alien, and specifically Aliens, director Ian Nathan and operator VC, which is the production company behind those lengthy In Search of Darkness horror documentaries, they are releasing what they're calling an expanded four-hour deep dive documentary about Aliens. Again, this is going to be a four-hour documentary. It is going to be coming out really soon. You will be able to order a digital copy of this film, this four-hour documentary, digital, for $49.99. And it will be available in June of this year. And then if you want physical media, there will be a Blu-ray release released in July that will run you a hefty $99.99.
Hmm. So the Lord of the Rings, the extended version.
Hell yeah. You know, it's funny. I have the entire series and miniseries on my Xbox, actually. It's a different switch over that I got to go to for television. But I recently saw a picture from the V series, which I loved. As a kid, totally loved V.
Yeah, V was great.
I guess there's a scene where there's a bunch of, like, companies, like people, like, lined up, and you see their name tags. And I don't know, I can't fully confirm because I haven't checked the series yet. One of those groups of people are Weyland Wutani.
No way.
I was like, no shit, that's a nice little toss in there, you know? That marries the V universe to Alien.
That is pretty fucking cool.
All
right, what else are we talking about?
Steve Buscemi, unique and versatile actor. It's been announced that he has joined the cast for the upcoming second season of the Netflix show Wednesday. While what position he will be taking on this show is at this time still under wraps, the strong rumor going around is that he is going to play the new principal at Nevermore Academy.
It's like a living madball.
Yeah. I still haven't seen Wednesday season one, so that's cool. I know that the monkey did, but like, it sucked. I was like, okay, good.
I never made it through the first episode. I tried like three times, and like I said, I don't think there was anything particular that was like, hey, I'm not liking this. There was just like something would constantly come up, and for whatever reason, I'd just be like, yeah, all right, you know, I'll watch it eventually. And you know, it's not like I haven't done that with a shit ton of other shows though, too. So.
No, that's true. You know,
but see,
you guys know
here's
me, I'm
the weird
jack,
thing.
I guess, so.
So, like, here's the weird thing, though, right? Like, I do this with all those other shows. And I guess, realistically speaking, they just might not be entertaining me or holding my attention. Because we did just recently watch Three Body Problem, which is on Netflix. And that was, we watched that within a week. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I watched it. I was like, I couldn't wait to watch, like, the next episode. The fucking series was great. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. So much so, I'm actually reading the book. Because the series is based on a trilogy of books, but it's a Chinese author. So, like, when they made the series, they gave it more of a diverse cast, throwing in some Brits, throwing in some Americans, whereas the book seems to just be strictly, like, Chinese characters. But they translated it into English. But, yeah, I'm going to read the whole fucking trilogy because I don't know. I don't know if they're going to get another season or not, and I'm not going to fucking wait to find out.
Well, and it's all about how much you want to watch the show, like you had said. You know, with, like, Wednesday, you're like, I don't fucking care. Like, I'll watch it eventually. But when you see something that you really like, you're like, I can't wait to fucking watch the next episode. Like,
fuck yeah.
Why is it not here? Like, yeah, that's what it all comes down to, is how much you're involved with the content. If you're not into it, you're just going to be like, oh, I'll watch it eventually. Like, Wednesday, like, I don't like Jenna Ortega, but I love the Addams Family. And then I saw that Luis Guzman was playing Gomez and you know, Catherine Zeta-Jones was playing Morticia. I'm like, I'm out. I'm good. That makes no sense. But, I mean, you know, but then again, you could burn through a fucking whole show. You're invested. So, interesting how those things work out. But. All right, Dean, what else are we talking about?
All right.
Flipping through
Jason
those notes
goes
that
to
can't
hell.
Read.
Jason goes to hell. I only can't read them because sometimes I can't read my writing. But Jason goes to hell, the documentary, Hearts of Darkness, the making of the Final Friday, has completed the editing stage. You know, that is the word from director Adam Marcus. He says that the documentary is almost 2 hours long. But he said there will also be another 2 hours of goodness crammed into the Blu-ray that they cannot fit into the film, and that there's also going to be 13 mini-docs on what he is calling, again, the insanely stacked Blu-ray edition. At this time, there is no available release date.
I mean, I tried to watch that recently, Jason Goes to Hell. Yeah, it's not good.
I was going to say, the documentary will probably be more entertaining and better than the actual film. But
I
don't know.
Hope so.
It still gave us Creighton Duke, bro. It still gave us Creighton Duke.
Yep.
So I can be thankful for that. Because I do like
when I think about Jason Voorhees, I think about a little girl in a pink dress sticking a hot dog to a donut. One of the greatest lines. You know, but yeah, that fucking whole movie is a mess. Like,
probably the great
and a market surgery.
It's probably the greatest line in the Friday franchise, if you really think about it. Like, as far as like actual lines of dialogue through the Friday the 13th movies, I think of that. I think of you know, must have been those damn enchiladas.
Yeah, five. That's a good one.
This sucks on so many levels.
Oh, yeah,
Jason X,
you know what I mean? And I'm thinking about, like, you know what I mean? Like, as far as, like, memorable lines, come on, maggot head, you know what I mean? Like, I think of that, like that. That's the kind of shit, like,
Jason 6,
see, like, I can say those lines, and you can know exactly what movie they came from. So, for all intents and purposes, I do think it's one of those, you know. I have to say the NJ Horror Con is this weekend at the Edison Expo Center.
Nice.
In Edison, New Jersey. Interesting enough, they're doing a photo op. I think the guy's name's like VC something. I don't remember his exact
Dupree.
Name. Yes, VC Dupree. They have him and Kane Hodder doing a photo op together. Now, VC Dupree and Jason Takes Manhattan is Julius, the young boxing auteur who proceeds to try to fight Jason mano a mano on a rooftop in Vancouver, New York City.
And he lost that battle epically. But, yeah, like, to me, for me, like, Friday 13th lines, My favorite song is going to be "He's Killing Me, He's Killing Me" from Part 4.
There you go.
Fucking
part
Rob.
4 right there. Jason goes to hell, you know?
Yep. Such a fucking great line. Or fucking Crispin Glover. Where's the corkscrew? Huh? Where's the corkscrew? You
know? Where's the goddamn corkscrew? Well, yes. Yeah, those aren't the ones that first come to mind. But absolutely. You know, or come on. I mean, fucking, are you a dead fuck? Like, that's a line I think. Yes. Put it in Teddy's computer.
Oh,
here's one
Teddy,
I like.
She loved it.
Mm-hmm. Those cunts aren't going to wait all night.
Yes. There you go. Friday the 13th, part 5. The pair of fucking 50s greasers that came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, the greasers out of nowhere.
Yeah. Come on, gotta take shit. Come on. Are you ready? Are you ready? Come on. I'll fucking kill you. Are you ready? Are you ready? And fucking
maybe
you're gonna kill him, Ma.
Okay, here's the thing, right? So that guy, we know that they were going to hook up with some chicks, right? They were all excited for it. Now that kid was all kinds of like hyped up, right? The other dude, what did he have to do? He had to take a shit. Here's the question. Oh, there you go, there's a classic line. Fucking what was it? Fucking snow in the mountain, something in the mountains, and snowflakes up your nose. Doing the fucking cocaine.
Better off dead.
But that, no. In Friday the 13th Part 5, the dude's doing the blow in the car.
It's snowing on the mountain.
The chick. Oh, and snowflakes up your nose, snow flurries up your nose. Maybe those two dudes, right, were his dealer. They were dealing the fucking yay to that kid, because that's why he's got to take a shit. You know, they always cut that shit with baby laxatives. Yeah. You always know when that happens because, you know, you do a couple of fucking toots and the next thing you know, you got a fucking poot. You definitely don't want to fart because you don't know what the fuck's going to be in your pants. So you end up in the bathroom fucking trying to shit and then looking out the window at the same time. Somebody was out there. I swear. But anyway.
That's awesome. All right.
Trucks
but,
are bad.
Yeah, Steve, what else are we talking about tonight?
That Devin Sala wants there to be, being that he has appeared and albeit playing different characters all of the seasons of the Chucky TV series, he really, really, really wants there to be an Idle Hands / Chucky crossover. That does not mean that anything like that is actually going to happen. It's just that he would want that to happen. And also, I know we talked about Chucky earlier, and I just mentioned Chucky just now. I have also learned that season 4 of Chucky has officially been pitched to the network, and now they're just waiting. They're going to get another go at it.
Okay. Cool. We'll see if it happens. I mean, I'm having fun. So, awesome. What else are we talking about, Dean?
We are talking about the fact that one of my personal favorites, the 1986 classic Killbots, a.k.a. Chopping Mall, is getting a novelization from Encyclopocalypse Production. I'm sorry, Encyclopocalypse Publishing Company. So popular, Chopping Mall, James Wan wants to remake it. On Black Friday, Shout Factory TV aired it for 24 hours straight. But this novelization of Chopping Mall is available right now. There's going to be trade paperbacks, mass market paperbacks, et cetera, available for pre-order for $14.99. They will be shipping in November, and every purchase also gets a free e-book digital copy as well as their tangible ordered copy.
Don't have to look into that. Love that Jim Wynorski film, Chopping Mall, from 1988. So cool to see it's getting a novelization. We'll look into it. All right. So what else are we talking about, Dean?
I think that about covers it. Also, just a quick note that this required discussion, but that production has officially wrapped on Terrifier 3.
Oh. So you should stay tuned for Terrifier 3, the Christmas edition, as they're calling it. Hopefully Damon Leone keeps it down to 1:30 because like the goal one I talked about on the show when we covered Terrifier 2, It's too long, 2 hours for a slasher.
Absolutely.
Get to the point, sir. So, I think he had actually said that he's going to make Terrifier 3 hour and 30, you know, a quick bite of a movie.
Yes, yes. He has said that it's going to be way short.
Yeah. And, you know, so that'll be good. I mean, I don't mind Terrifier. Like, I don't really get the love that it gets, you know, with Art the Clown and all that stuff. I mean, it's fine, but like, I don't put him on the Mount Rushmore slashers. And I know a lot of modern fans put Art the Clown up there. But, you know, for me, I'm an old fucking guy. I'm going to be 40 next month. So, you know, my slashers are traditional. You know, Freddy, Jason, Michael, Leatherface. You know, might even put Candyman up there one time. But, no, just Terrifier, Art the Clown. I don't think I could put him up there. It's not
I mean,
well,
classic, so wait, hold on. But, okay, here's the question, though. Maybe that's not on the classic Mount Rushmore of horror or slasher characters, but what about a modern-day version? Like, you know, there really aren't that many modern slasher characters to really go with anyway.
No, you're right. Like, modern-wise, it
right.
would kind of be hard. Because what would you put up there? I mean, I guess Art for modern, Victor Crowley, Adam Green's Victor Crowley, Hatchet,
mm-hmm.
I think would be up there. But yeah, after that, you kind of get lost because we don't really have a lot of modern slasher movies, characters, I should say. Because then you go back to the 90s with Ghostface and with the Fisherman from I Know What We Did Last Summer. Mm-hmm. Urban Legend, you know, the Parka Killer, which happened to be Rebecca Gayhart. Spoilers for those who haven't seen that movie since it came out like 20 years ago.
Which, again, you're talking early
you know.
2000 films. Though, I guess Hatchet falls into that, too, because that was, what, 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 2007, 2008. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of falls into that, you know. But, you know, it's kind of hard because we don't really have modern slashers, you know, and I think that's a great point, Cool, because now I'm thinking about them, like, we don't really have them. They're not as prevalent as they were when we were growing up, as they are now. Like, we're getting returns, like with Michael Myers, with the, you know, David Gordon Green movies. Leatherface is kind of Thanksgiving. Yeah, John Carver, I think, deserves to be up there, but at the same time, I don't think that he ever will be. You know, I think that it's going to take Eli Roth a little bit to kind of put him on that pantheon of modern slashers. Although I do think that he needs to be up there because I love John Carver. Like, I love Thanksgiving. I think it's great. We're going to be getting part two in 2025. But yeah, it's kind of odd because you have Ghostface kind of again in the modern era, but Ghostface is a product of the 90s. Like, it's not a new slasher. So.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, like, where do you consider the modern slasher to really start from? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, too.
Yeah.
Because I kind of see, like, I see Ghostface, I see Scream, and I kind of feel like that is another starting point. You know, you had the 80s idea of what the slashers were. Then you had the Ghostface thing, and I kind of feel like that carried on through, like, that to that mid-2000s. So maybe you could almost even say, like, maybe you could say, like, Hatchet, Victor Crowley, was kind of like the birth of what might be the newer version of what a slasher is, where they take the, you know what, how I kind of see it, too? The new version of slashers takes the gore to a whole nother level. Like, everything becomes over-the-top gore. You know, like, when you look at, like, a Victor Crowley movie, it's not like Jason stabs somebody, right, and blood comes out. Or, like, you know, you have a scene, like, in Friday the 13th, Part 6. I forget the character's name. Maybe it was Sissy or whatever it was. It was the short, cute little black girl. You know, like, he pulls her into the room, and there's, like, blood everywhere, but you don't actually witness the murder occurring. You know, whereas Victor Crowley, it's like he grabs you, and, like, you know, it starts with, like, a cut, but then there's blood fucking spraying everywhere. The next thing you know, he's grabbing you and he's ripping your fucking arm off. Like, it's hitting that over-the-top level of shit, which I guess also would then go close to what you see in the Terrifier films, you know? So that kind of fits in with that same theme as far as it being over-the-top gore and violence based on more modern slashers of today.
So thank you, Adam. Mm-hmm. You started a whole entire fucking thing. Look at you.
A whole entire thing.
I love Adam Green. I got to meet him in person at Monster Mania, and he was so fucking sweet, so nice, so humble. Exactly what you want a celebrity that you meet can be. But moving away from the slashers, we're talking about zombies tonight. For my film pick of the week, Festival of the Living Dead just got released on Tubi about a week ago. Directed by Jen and Sylvia Soska, the Twisted Twins themselves, paying tribute to the late, great George A. Romero.
Love you, ladies.
This movie, as they had said, is GARF approved, George A. Romero Foundation approved, taking place within the George A. Romero universe of Night of the Living Dead. So while attending a festival to commemorate the original zombie massacre back in 1968, Ash and her friends encounter the living dead and must fight back or be devoured. So like I said at the start, this is brand new territory for me. It's brand new territory for you guys as well. I never saw it. I was like, you know what? It's coming out in Tubi. It's free. I love the Soskas. I love George A. Romero. I love his dead movies. So I need to check this out and see if it's any good. So I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay. I thought that the last, like, kind of third act was really fucking good, where it's just kind of fun with the zombies attacking. But I felt like they're not the story writers on this movie. They didn't write this script. They didn't write the story. But I felt like the people that wrote it didn't really kind of get the assignment as far as kind of making it a tribute to 1968's Night of the Living Dead. Like, for me, there wasn't enough in the movie to kind of call back to Ben and Barbara and Johnny and all those who died in 1968, and now you're commemorating it with a festival. Like, you know, it kind of felt like, yeah, we're talking about it, but at the same time, it's kind of like its own zombie movie. You have fast-moving zombies. You have slow-moving zombies. So there was some fun to be had, but at the same time, I don't really feel like it met the parameters of kind of paying tribute completely to Romero's vision back in 1968. And maybe that's just me, but I still had a fun time. So with that being said, Ghoul, what'd you think about Festival of the Living Dead?
Okay, so I know you said earlier that you wanted everybody to be nice. I'm not going to be mean. Okay, I'm not.
Right,
I promise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you know what?
I was critical.
Be nice. You're going to be honest.
Let me finish. I said I'm not going to be mean, but I am going to be honest, okay? Because that is how it's just me. Otherwise, it's just not me being me. I agree with you wholeheartedly that this film does not, for something that's supposed to be the spiritual sequel to Night of the Living Dead, the only relations that I found to that original film is that it takes place in Pennsylvania, that there's a meteor in the ground, which we kind of hear about, the satellite or whatever it was that we hear about in the original film. And that's really it. We hear about a massacre that occurred. As far as everything else goes, this movie felt like every low-budget version of any kind of zombie movie that's come out in the last, 20 years at this point. I have seen this movie 1,001 times. I saw this movie in the fucking 90s, and they did it better. It was called Rave to the Grave, to really throw it there. Honestly, this felt subpar for what I know those two women are capable of doing. That, I think, is really what kills me here. Like, I see this, and, like, there's none of that smart dialogue that I've seen in things like American Mary. You know what I mean? Like, I know the Soskas, but like you said, they didn't write this. They just directed it. So I don't know if that had a part in it. I don't know. I came away from this and I was happy when it was over. The majority of the characters were kind of like, they were either irritating or just,
just downright, like, atrocious, you know, which is okay. I don't mind that because it's fun when you watch them get killed. But, like, you know, it was just – it was bothersome on so many levels because I just – I got so excited when you had originally said, like, this was going to be the spiritual – the sequel. And, like, knowing that those two fucking women were involved with it, I really had so – my hopes went up through the fucking roof. And I guess maybe that's part of it. Maybe I just put my fucking – I put the bar too high, and I needed to kind of, like, maybe just rein it in a little bit, bring it down a little bit. And, you know, I'll probably give this another view at some point or another. But yeah, overall, I came away very, very disappointed.
Okay. Dean, what did you think about Festival of the Living Dead?
So here's the thing, right? And it's tricky because of the fact that, like, right now, like, I can go outside and arrange a couple of fucking sticks on my driveway and then, you know, have my dog trample through them and say that it's the spiritual sequel to Night of the Living Dead, and I can put it out. Like, because of its public domainness, anybody can do anything they want with the property. So, yes, the Saska sisters were involved. Yes, it was said it was a spiritual sequel to Night of the Living Dead. But just because that's the case doesn't mean that someone that's going to be putting it together or writing it is going to be doing something of quality. I found this movie, I guess the best word I can pick is just like annoying. There was just so much screaming and noise and like annoying sounding screaming, and I feel like once action picked up in the back half, it felt rushed to me. I believe that also, real quick, as it just popped into my head, certain things that you noticed. Did you catch any of the names when they were introducing the festival and they were watching that ad for it on the device and they were like, oh, and we have this sick lineup of bands, and they put, like, a whole list of bands up on the screen. Did you guys catch any of the names of those?
I didn't, no.
All right, so one of the bands was called the We're Coming to Get You Barbaras. Another one of the bands was called the Winchesters. Like, there were like, all kinds of little things, and if you pause it, I had to pause it, because, like, as it flew by super fast, I caught the word Winchester, and I was like, I bet they did something there. And
the King's
I
House?
Zipped it back. What's that?
Yeah.
The King's House.
The Winchester.
That's his apartment. It's the Winchester.
Yes. No, I know. Duh. I zipped it back and paused it, like, right when they showed that lineup of festival bands. So I think there was another one too, but there was all kinds of little nods, like zombie movie nods in there as well, and everything. But yeah, I just thought this was annoying and it was fine, you know, like, no harm, no foul. Like, sure, it's a spiritual sequel to Night of the Living Dead, but there's been a billion variations on Night of the Living Dead. And, you know, I feel that, I don't know, Night of the Living Dead is this monumental original thing made on a shoestring budget that launched George Romero into the world and everything that he did in the zombie universe after. But I just feel that it's a property that's out there that's ripe for anybody to make movies surrounding, and this is just another one of them. Sure, the Saska sisters, you know, have some name cachet behind them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to watch this and be like, oh, wow, this is like the spiritual sequel to Night of the Living Dead. It just felt like annoying to me.
No, 100%, and I agree. Like, we all kind of went into this blind. It wasn't one of those movies where I pick where I'm like, I love this movie, I hope they like it too. Like, I was just like, I hope it's a good movie, and I think that the third act was definitely a highlight, but let's get into it. So the movie opens with a shot of immediate...
I'm sorry, just to cut into, I'm so sorry, I don't mean to, like, interrupt the whole play-by-play part. But, like, so, like, here's even, like, a prime example, right? And I know that Dean's going to get this completely. We've done a lot of music festivals, you know, a lot of
yes.
them. This movie could have been ripe for, like, a complete horror satire of what those festivals are like. And I feel like it was, like, the best that they could do was, like, oh, she must be tripping on mushrooms.
you know, or like the sequence in which they're kind of walking through, but like it's such an above fucking shot that you can't even see if any of the people are real or if it was just fucking like an animated sequence where they were walking and like you couldn't tell if the people were like zombies yet or if they were just really high, you know, because it's a fucking music festival.
I thought like, the same thing.
Yeah, but, like, those were all things that they could have played upon. They could have played upon better, and yet they just failed. Like, the writing just really failed this. I'm sorry, King. Go ahead. Do your thing, my friend.
So let's do it. So the movie opens with a shot of a meteor rock that has crashed to Earth and now hums ominously. We then cut to a bedroom where Ash is talking to her friend Iris, but future college plans that include Harvard, but Iris isn't too hip to the idea of college. Destiny and Lindsay arrive at Ash's house.
Well, this
both
is,
their
this
friends
is the
with
meteor
Kevin.
That crashed in 68 or whatever it is, isn't it?
It was not a meteor. It was a lunar probe. So it was a NASA probe that was coming back from Venus. So in
but
this movie, it's a meteor.
Okay, but that is what they were trying to go with, right? That's supposed to be the very thing that crashed in 68.
Yeah, in this version.
In this movie, that is... Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So in the original film, you hear about the meteor, the probe that crashed to Earth.
Yeah.
In this film, they turn that probe into this meteor, and that's where they're doing this festival.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a site where the meteor crashed. So that's what they're doing. And in the original, it was because Romero never fucking cared. Like, he didn't want to tell you what happened to make the zombies come about. He just was like, fuck it, fine.
It was a background thing that was going on. It might have had something to do with it, or it might not have had something to do with it. You know, it just so happened that fucking satellite had come down.
So Ash's boyfriend Kevin and Iris aren't too happy to be involved in celebrating Ash's birthday. Kevin is obviously like, let's party. Iris is like, let's just stay here. The two girls, Destiny and Lindsay, enter the house and are frightened by Ash's brother Luke wearing a wolf mask. Destiny and Lindsay are bummed that no one is there to party, but Ash tells them that she's on babysitting duty until her parents get back from their second honeymoon. Kevin and his best friend Ty arrive with a keg and a baggie of Living Death. But Ash doesn't want any of that, especially with Luke being at home. The friends then reveal to Ash that their plan is to attend the Festival of the Living Dead. they reveal that their plan is to attend the Festival of the Living Dead back for its 55th year to commemorate those who died in the tragedy of 1968. It's pretty much Burning Man, but to celebrate people that died from the ghoul virus. Ash wants to go, but she can't because she has to watch Luke. Kevin then decides to go downstairs with Ty and tap that keg. Kevin finds a rifle and a framed photo of Ash's grandfather, Ben Connors. Yes, that Ben from Romero's Night of the Living Dead, just not Dwayne Jones. It's a stock photo of a guy in the basement, which I was kind of disappointed because I was like, you know what, it would have been better if they had gotten a stock photo of Dwayne Jones, but they went in that opposite direction. So upstairs, the girls watch a video on...
Oh, yeah, I guess if they used the stock photo, it wouldn't have mattered because you're allowed to use that as a piece of the film. But would they have had to pay the family of Dwayne Jones to have his likeness in the film?
That's a good point, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of other questions that we could be asking about
and it
that.
Was
like,
Ben,
as far as things.
I don't remember there ever being any mention from that character of him being married, of him having a wife, of him having to get back to anybody.
None, because in the original version, Ben was just a guy. Like, Ben was just a guy that got kind of wrapped up in the zombie fucking breakout, and he was driving home, and he just got kind of caught up into it. But in this film, you know, he's a guy, and then he eventually had grandkids, and, you know, his rifle that he used, the Winchester 1865, is in the basement.
Hold on, are we sure their grandfather is Ben? Did it say Ben?
Yes. They made sure to mention, yes.
Okay, so then in this universe, too, he didn't die because they mentioned fucking meeting him. The kids talk about
Grandpa. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, he did not die in this version of Festival of the Living Dead. He was alive, and he killed a bunch of corpses with that rifle that's in the basement, and then he eventually died. So, again, it's kind of convoluted because it's like, well... How does this take place in Romero's universe? Because Ben died at the end of 1968.
Terribly.
You know,
it's
looking
horrible. Sad as fuck.
So Upstairs, the girls watch a video on their phone from the festival of a guy doing the Stardust Challenge, which involves snorting some of the living death. Iris then tells Ash to go to the festival and she'll watch Luke. Excitedly, Ash decides that she'll go as Kevin appears with a rifle. Luke enters, and then we have Kevin pointing the gun at Luke. He gets yelled at by Ash, and she immediately disassembles the rifle because she obviously knows something about weapons. After all, this is the same rifle that her grandfather shot corpses with. Ash tells him that she's going to the festival, and the group celebrates, much to Iris's chagrin. As Ash, now in her party outfit, gets ready to leave, Luke asks her where she's going. She tells him not to worry about it, just to go have fun and watch his blood sugar because he has diabetes. So the group is off to the festival. They reach a long line for the festival, but Kevin has a friend named Tommy working the festival, so they'll take the employee way in, where they won't hit any lines. As they drive, Kevin takes another one of the living dead pills that he has, which is basically just caffeine. As Kevin turns to kiss Ash with the living dead between his teeth, he hits someone that looks a lot like a corpse. They crash. Kevin gets knocked out cold, and Lindsay has a broken leg. Kevin soon wakes up, rushing from the car to vomit. They realize the corpse that they hit is long gone, and they try to figure out a plan to get help. Kevin doesn't want to lose his scholarship to Harvard due to being intoxicated, so Ash will have to say she was driving, but she took a living dead pill too, so she's pretty much fucked up. Destiny and Lindsay will stay with the wrecked car while Ash, Kevin, and Ty head to the festival to get help. We also see the corpse from earlier getting up to where he fell and beginning to walk again. Lindsay then decides to go live on her phone and talk about the accident, how she almost died in hopes of going viral. Destiny leaves the car and notices the corpse walking towards her, which she believes to be someone that could help them. The corpse then begins to attack the car and the sisters cover. They're terrible people.
The characters are all very unlikable, I think the only one that I really like is Ash. To be perfectly frank, I think, I enjoy her, other than the fact that she's obviously, and I mean, let's all be real here, I'm sure at some point or another, we all, we forgoed whatever responsibilities we had, in her case, her brother, who she entrusts to her best friend, so it's not like it's necessarily a terrible thing, but, overall, all of these characters are just annoying, including the one young lady who's from Gen V, actually. She is one of the characters in the spinoff Iris. Series of The Boys. Yes. Yes. Not Iris. No. Lindsay.
Was it not Iris? Okay. Lindsay,
yeah, no.
Okay.
Iris,
yeah, I thought it was.
Iris was Catwoman in the Gotham series from years ago on Channel 5 or whatever it was.
Is that right? Okay, yeah. I thought I knew her from somewhere. So we cut back to Ash's house where wheelchair-bound Blaze shows up. Iris lets him know that he missed them by a bunch of hours. They head inside and decide to get high. Iris is bummed that Ash and her are growing distant, so Blaze takes the time to talk about something important, but his phone chimes and we see that the Stardust Challenge guy from earlier is now vomiting and his nose begins to bleed. No one knows what to do as he begins to become a zombie and begins attacking the people. Blaze and Iris think it's just a zombie porn and they aren't taking it too seriously. Meanwhile, Ash, Kevin, and Ty arrive at the festival and go searching for help. Party goers are already sick, but the three...
I'm not a screenwriter or anything like that, right? But how do you have a kid with no legs getting stoned and not have a fucking line at some point where he tells you that he can't feel his legs? I'm sorry. But, you're going to introduce, these characters smoking weed. You at least got to make them kind of like they're underage characters smoking weed. They're graduating high school. So it's not like they're
mm-hmm. –
it's not like medical grade where you could be like, oh, well, he's just – well, I mean, maybe he could be getting a fucking, a med card. But, again, if you're going to make stoners in this film – you gotta fucking at least poke some fun with that. Make it fun for them to be fucking stoners. You kind of made the whole thing silly with the whole girl with the mushrooms, and we're gonna get a couple of sequences here and there with Ty. When he gets mushroom view. For those little bits and pieces.
I can't feel my legs. If there would have been a part when they got. I feel like that would work if he ended up taking something stronger than just some weed.
Yeah.
All we're introduced with this character is him smoking a bong. You know what I mean?
At
so,
that
like,
point.
Yeah, so even, later on, like, they give him something else. Like, it's just little missed things that they could have worked with, you know? And I wanted to like the character. I did, but the actor's performance was just so, like, it was
like,
very wrong.
Yeah, I like Blaze. Like, I definitely like Blaze. I think out of all of them, I think Blaze and Iris are my two favorite characters. Like, I definitely love their vibe, especially when you see what Blaze does later. You know, I think that was great, but yeah, just everybody else, like even Ash was just kind of like, it's okay. Like, it's fine. Like, they tried to make her into a great character, but again, you're not really putting that much Night of the Living Dead into this movie where it's just like, you're fucking Ben's granddaughter. Like, that motherfucker survived an entire night in a farmhouse by himself with a fucking rifle. They just kind of throw it away. Like, they just don't bring it up again. And I think that was my problem. That they just really don't connect it enough to Night of the Living Dead. But anyway, so when the group arrives at the festival, they notice
genetics doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be badass, but obviously, again, being raised, knowing her grandfather, being taught these things as we see her disassemble the rifle and stuff like that, we're told, and like in little bits and pieces, we're shown that she should be somewhat of a badass. But then there's points where we don't necessarily get that. Now, we can blame that on the fucking shit that she's taken. Remember, she's given some of the mushrooms, too, from the girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, so, like, as you're saying, you know, like, we get to the festival and all this and that, right? So while we're doing all of this, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, you know, when I think about the original Night of the Living Dead, right, I think about, you know, a bunch of individuals trapped in a location and how that affects their psyche throughout the entirety of the film. It's not so much the zombies. It's all about the people. Dean, I know you're going to know the name of it. There's the episode on for Twilight Zone with the bunker, where everybody's inside of the bunker. What's that? What's the episode called? I always forget it.
The Monsters of Mulberry Street. That's not the bunker. It's not Monsters to Do on Mulberry Street. The one with the bunker, are you talking about the one when they hear the report that there's going to be a nuclear, like a nuclear attack, and the one family is the one that has the bunker, and all the other neighbors are trying to get inside of it?
Yes.
I believe it's just called The Shelter.
Oh, okay. So the other one I'm thinking about is what King actually said, the Mulberry Street episode, though, too.
Monsters.
So, like, those are the things that, like, I think about when I think about what Night of the Living Dead is, you know? We even see that when we see Return of the Living Dead, you know, obviously written by Jon Russo, who did have a hand in Night of the Living Dead. But again, a similar thing. People trapped in a location and they need to fight their way out, right? But a lot of it also has to do with the interactions and the dialogue. Those are the things that are strong. And that's where this movie gets weak. When they got into the medical building, once they get there and everything and they're going for help and they're trying to find a phone and all that nonsense, I thought that maybe this is where the film was finally going to start taking off. Like, hey, they're going to be trapped in here. They're going to get stuck in this, and now this is where the movie's going to get good. But, again, we really don't ever get there. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting, bro. I'll stop. I'll just be quiet.
It's fine. It's fine. I love it. I honestly do. So they arrive at the festival. There's this large Wicker Man-type structure holding a guitar that was set up for the festival. Foreshadowing? Absolutely. Stay tuned. Meanwhile, back in Ash's house, Luke tells Iris and Blaze that they should go to the festival. They could pretend to be delivery drivers. I mean, Godzilla is playing there after all. Iris's favorite fucking band. So Iris is against the idea at first, but in the end, the three end up going. On the way, their truck starts running out of gas as they reach a closed-off road. Iris ends up finding a side road for the staff entrance to use. We then cut back to Ash, Kevin, and Ty as they continue to search for help. They reach the nurse's station but find it empty. They follow a trail of blood as we hear someone screaming outside. They walk further into the station and find a survivor who claims they're everywhere. She says, they're in me. I can feel it so clearly. This woman is insane. But no, not so much insane because she's just on mushrooms. Ty finds the baggie, says she's going to be fine. We just need to leave her alone. They hear a noise outside, and Ty decides to go out and get a signal for his cell phone. Kevin tells Ash she needs to go, but she wants to take the shrooms girl with them. Kevin then tells her that she'll be fine as we see a zombie enter the frame, walking with a portable IV bag. Outside, Ty tells them that someone will be there soon. Don't worry about that. But as they're outside, they hear music, and they decide to take some shrooms before finding the band stage. Ty puts his phone back into his pocket where Flash's call ended. So he never made that call. He's a dick. Ty is a
Did you know that me and Dean actually know the real reason and the real person that started this entire zombie plague at this festival? Her name was Raven, and she had a bird on her shoulder.
Oh, that's fun.
Stay tuned. Hold on. There's something with that coming right up.
So back on the road, Iris finds the abandoned car from earlier and the backseat covered in blood. Iris gets back to her truck and tells Blaze that no one is in the car and that Ash and company must be okay. Iris figures they must have gotten out and walked to the festival, so she and Blaze will have to find them. Back at the festival, though, it's a real fucking rager. As the band is playing, everybody's having fun, Ash starts to fucking trip hard, and it certainly doesn't help that Jen and Sylvia Sosker are there to blow fucking smoke in her face. So she just needs to go get some fresh air. She begins seeing zombies during her fucking trip. She manages to get some water just as the zombies attack. It's truly a bummer summer. Ash quickly goes in search of Kevin as we cut back to the road with Iris, Blaze, and Luke, who happen to find Destiny. They try to get her attention. Iris can see that she's in a state of shock, and she says that she had to leave her sister behind because she couldn't walk due to a broken leg. Iris helps Destiny to the truck and discovers they're out of gas, and they're going to need to walk the rest of the way to the festival. Meanwhile, Ash and Kevin try to find each other during the ensuing zombie attack. Ash gets knocked over when a large man falls on top of her, which she manages to free herself from as a zombie female attacks her. Iris shows up with a rifle and blows off the zombie's head. The friends then embrace, and they run off as we see Ty and Kevin sneak past zombies feasting on a victim. They find a cop car with a gun on the seat. While the cop is being eaten by a zombie, Kevin attempts to get the gun, but he gets scared, so Ty decides to stand up for himself and go get it himself. He shoots at a zombie, which causes the other zombies to take notice of him as they run off. Ash finds out that Luke is with Blaze and Iris and Destiny. She's totally pissed, but doesn't have time because now Godzilla are completely zombies and running towards them, which I love. Blaze is like, this is kind of Shakespearean, right? The fact that you guys love this fucking band and you're about to be killed by them, it's Shakespearean, but it's kind of fucked up. So the group makes it to the nurse's station again, and they discover that Kevin and Ty have been inside the entire time, which isn't something Ash is happy to see. Destiny then has a fully mental breakdown as they try to figure out what to do next. As they argue, they hear a zombie approaching. It attacks Kevin, and Kevin fights back using the zombie's IV stand, which rips off his face. More zombies show up, and the group kills them. And once they find the room to hide in...
Cool effect that we did not see enough of. You know what I mean? Like, I would really have loved another shot of that.
Mm-hmm. It was so fucking cool. Not enough. I mean, you do get to see it again when the zombies leave the nurse's station, but yeah, it was just a cool fucking effect. So once they find another room to hide in, Luke begins to have an attack brought on by his diabetes. He needs insulin, but he doesn't have a shot. Ash gives him some juice to drink as they find out that there's an ambulance on the grounds, which will certainly have insulin in it. Ash is going to make a run for the ambulance. Mm-hmm. But Kevin wants Ash to stay. And Kevin completely has his turn here where he's just like, you need to stay here. Your little brother isn't fucking worth it. Just stay here and we'll just figure it out. And she's like, well, fuck you, dude. Like, you know, you're just scared to tie. Like, you just want to get his approval. And they immediately break up. She's like, yeah, we're done. And he's like, well, that's fucked up. She's like, yeah, no. Like, I'm helping my fucking little brother. I don't give a fuck about you, dude. Like, you know, I need to help him. So Ash heads outside as we see a dog eating a mutilated body. Iris decides to join Ash, also
calling him out completely on being like a fucking simp to his older brother.
A bitch. Yeah. You know, she's like, why do you got to fucking get his approval the entire time? You fucking suck, dude. And he's like, whatever. I guess we're done. So Iris decides to join Ash on this mission to get the insulin. And despite bickering over the devolving friendship, The girls are going to find the ambulance. Meanwhile, back at the station, Ty is convinced that Luke is infected due to his bad trip of the mushrooms. But Destiny definitely is a fucking zombie. Blaze and Ty fight as Destiny attacks Kevin. Ty tries shooting her, but shoots and kills Kevin by mistake. Ty then decides to flee the nurse's station as it begins to rain. At the ambulance, Iris grabs a flare and decides to light it up as a distraction so Ash can get into the ambulance. Come on, fuck faces! Like, my favorite fucking line in this movie. When she is a badass, fucking lights up the fucking, you know, flares. And she's like, come on, fuck faces, let's go. Leads them away like Shaun did in Shaun of the Dead, which I love. She's like, let's go. I'm leading them all away. Ash eventually gets inside the ambulance, but she discovers a paramedic who is in the process of becoming a zombie. He tells her to take everything that she can before he eventually turns and feeds on flesh. She gets the insulin and runs for it while continuing outside. The zombies are just walking around and just continuing their feasts. Like, they nonstop. Like, at this point in the movie, I was kind of happy because I love the gore and the guts effects. When you see people getting ripped open, they're still alive as they're having their intestines eaten, which I always appreciate. Like, I love when Romero did it and David did. You would have a guy getting ripped open, but he's still alive as he's watching his fucking guts being eaten. Like, I was like, that's top quality.
That scene in Dawn of the Dead. Oh, you're talking about the one in Day of the Dead. Sorry. I'm thinking about the fat guy in the blood pressure machine in Dawn of the Dead.
When he gets his arm ripped off. Yeah.
And as a kid, that fucking scene freaked me fucking out the first time I saw it, man. Like, seeing them getting, like, ripped into him and they're pulling his fucking guts out and shit. Like, that shit scarred me. You know? That's one of those that goes up there with, like, the poltergeist guy peeling his fucking face off and shit like that. So, yeah, I'm always a fan for shit like that, like, when it's done well.
And even in Day of the Dead, when the one guy gets his fucking head ripped off by the zombies and you can hear his vocal cords stretching as he's screaming, like, and they get higher and higher as they're, like, I was like, yes, I fucking love that. Like, I love gore like that. And I was glad to see it here. But back at the nurse's station, Blaze gets the gun Ty left and kills Destiny just as more zombies show up. Ty is seen making his way through Cuddle Cave as his bad shrooms trip continues. He's quickly chased by two zombies as we see back at the nurse's station. Blaze pretends to be dead, so the zombies eventually leave him behind. While running, Ty lands in the pit where the fallen meteor is as zombies begin to surround him. The fucking meteor is there. It's just there and pulsating, and the zombies kind of show up and they go around it. Are they going to do anything with it? No, which I was kind of surprised. I'm like, well, you know, it's fine, I guess, because he doesn't do anything with it. But Ash, meanwhile, is making her way back to Luke when she finds Iris's jacket, which she rolls up to take with her. Blaze shows up with Luke, and he explains that Destiny and Kevin are dead. A zombie shows up, and they kill him, and they find a set of car keys for a possible escape. Blaze and Ash head into the Cuddle Cave so she can give insulin to Luke. They'll have to wait to see if the insulin works. And during this time, Blaze asks Ash where Iris is, but it's not looking very good. Realizing that she could be dead, Blaze lights up a joint, and they too talk about memories of Iris and what she meant to them. Luke wakes up just as Ty runs in and takes him hostage. Iris, she's fine, by the way. She's on the main stage waging a one-woman war against the zombies. Eddie Munson, eat your fucking heart out. Because she not only has time to play a guitar, but she also has time to kill fucking zombies. Like, it was such a cool fucking shot of her fucking just rocking out with this guitar, then using it against the zombies. And in the meantime, Ty reveals that he's been infected, so they need to get to the car and get out of there, able to find a cure. Ash decides to act as a distraction so Blaze, Luke, and Ty can get to the car. Ash starts picking up zombies with a rifle and eventually comes across an undead Kevin, which she has to put down. And like we talked about earlier, I didn't really care much for these characters, so the whole, like, I don't want to do it, I'm like, just do it. Fucking put this guy down.
I get it. It's your boyfriend, all this and that, and there's going to be some kind of, like, emotional connection to it. But this scene was, like, way too drawn out for the type of movie that this is, you know? So it's almost like, it almost becomes like filler just to get like a couple extra like seconds in to, just to get that runtime up.
Yeah, it didn't do anything for me. I didn't care about the character to begin with. So the fact that she was having a hard time, like, I get it from a character standpoint. Justin and Carol, they just put him down. He's a zombie. He's out. So meanwhile, Iris is running from the entire zombie horde and decides to start a fire as she climbs
up. He just wanted a hug, though, if you noticed. He did not attack
her. Yeah, I saw that. When he put his arms out, I'm like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah, okay.
Huggies.
You know, it's to me, like, it was kind of like at the end of 1990s, Night of the Living Dead, the remake that Tom Savini directed. Like, when you see Ben at the end and he's a zombie, Tony Todd, like, you fucking felt that. Like, you're just like, this poor fucking guy. Like, you know, and it fucking hits you. When you see Kevin as a zombie, you're like, okay, fucking the kid sucked anyway. I don't care.
Yeah,
put him down. But when you see
Ben, I
would
have shot him from
the
back of the fucking head to begin with and just move on, you know? Like, let's go.
Easily.
Shit.
So,
he wanted to let your brother die. You know what I mean? Like, there's no fucking...
Yep.
He wanted to let your brother die due to his fucking diabetic fucking issue. Not even like your brother was bent. Nothing like that. He's just like, yo, your brother's got diabetes. Survival of the fittest, bitch. Like,
fuck,
let's go.
Yeah, it sucked. It was terrible. But Iris manages to find a spot on the guitar of the Wicker Man type structure to hold off the fort as Ash arrives to take out more zombies. As the structure burns, Iris climbs down and reunites with Ash on the ground as they seek safety under the stage. Iris reveals in this moment that she thought maybe she'd want to become one of the zombies when she was hiding up on the structure, but then she realized that she has a lot more to live for. All of a sudden, we hear gunshots ring out, and she knew she wanted to live. Ash apologizes in that time for being a shitty friend. You know, she was an outcast at one point, then she got popular. I'm sorry. So they rekindle their friendship. And knowing that the rifle is now empty, Iris and Ash need weapons. At dawn of the dead, see what it did there? We find Blaze, Kai, and Luke searching for the car, which they eventually find, as well as an undead Lindsay. She attacks Blaze, so Kai takes off in the car with Luke. Ash arrives with Luke and kills Lindsay right away. Blaze tells Ash that Kai took off with Luke just as the zombies show up and they have another fight. Back in the car with Kai and Luke, Luke is talking to him about his grandfather and about what it means to be brave. And then in a sudden fucking moment of badassdom, Luke grabs the gun off of Ty's lap and kills him. Take that, bitch. Mm-hmm. It was such, you know, fucking, I cracked up when I saw that because you were rewinding. That's laughing.
I mean,
just the fact that he's like, yeah, what?
Boom. It was so like scene though, you know what I mean? Like three scenes earlier. He put the gun on his lap. You got Luke looking at it, and then like, you know, looking back up at him and looking back at the gun. And they made sure to do the close up of the gun on his lap. Like, no, you know, he's not protecting it. He's not holding it. It's like, all right. So I know the kid's gonna shoot him. It's just, you know, go. I mean, obviously we don't have any time left, so like, I'm sorry. Go finish up the movie. My bad.
We will. We got this. So we got a little bit of wiggle room. So anyway, we cut back to the fight that Blaze, Iris, and Ash are having against the Living Dead. We soon see drones flying overhead and begin to bomb the zombies. Blaze reveals in this moment that Lindsay had bitten him, so he decides to give Iris one big old kiss on the lips, and they have to go. They have to find Ty and save Luke. Iris doesn't want to leave Blaze behind, but Blaze knows he has no other choice, so he just goes, let's go, motherfuckers, and lights himself on fire so that the zombies could have some barbecue. And
so
it was great.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, go. It was great, but...
Yeah, it's just, it didn't have that impact, and I think the actual practical effect didn't work. Like, when they cut back to the wheelchair, like, you barely see anything on the wheelchair, and I was like, oh. Like, you know, it could have been great, but at the same time...
It's like a burning sack of something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can't really tell if it was a...
It was a budgetary thing. Yeah.
Oh, well, sure.
You get to hear him scream. Like, you get to hear Blaze screaming as he's burning. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, all right, you know, that's...
Well, I don't know about cool. I thought it was fucking hysterical, to be honest with you. They're walking away, and you hear him, like, hi. And don't get me wrong, as somebody that has been lit on fire, I did burn my leg. You know, like, I know that shit hurts. So fucking, you know, hearing him like girly scream in the fucking background was fucking, it was like, wow, man,
I thought,
that's fucking funny. That had me laughing.
I dug
but,
it.
But,
yeah.
One thing that I did take from this, so like, did you think he actually got bit? Because I felt like he didn't get bit. He was just trying to come up with a reason to make him leave. Because he then says to him, I'm the slowest. I can't run with you guys anyway. You know what I mean? So like, I felt like he felt like the only way that they could get away was if he just told them he was bit and then he was going to light himself on fire. Now, what sucks is 2 seconds later, Luke comes rolling up in the fucking car. So realistically, Blaze just needed to last like another fucking 15 seconds.
That's how it always is in these fucking movies, though. Like, they're like, it's like, that's it, I'm done. Like, get away. Like, I'll, like, you know, distraction. And then 2 seconds later, fucking help shows up. And it's like, fuck. If I just waited 2 seconds longer, I would have gotten help, and Blaze could have lived. But, yeah, I absolutely don't think he was bit. I don't think he got bit at all. Because that wheelchair was on top of him when Lindsay was attacking him. Like, there's no way she could have bitten any part of him. Like you had said, well, I think he was just trying to say, you know what, I'm slow, I'm in a wheelchair, and you guys got to go. I mean, it sucks because I did like the character, but, you know, he did make that ultimate sacrifice so that they can get away. And once that's done, the car that Ty pulls up, like the Gold said, and Luke's behind the wheel. So Ash takes over driving, and then we hear the radio being turned on by Ash, and it turns out that that's Blaze's favorite song. So Iris tells her to turn it up. She turns up the volume, and the three drive off, survivors of the zombie outrage, as we cut the credits. I think it was the dean that said that, where it just feels like it's kind of like a race to the end. Like, especially with that ending, like, it just kind of felt like, okay, like, we're done. Like, you know, the movie's over. Like, they survived. Like, there wasn't kind of any kind of finality to it where I'm like, this is a good ending. Like, this is good. Like, you know, they survived and they're going to live on to another day. It's just kind of like, it's over. Like, the zombies are going to be bombed by drones and they're not going to be around anymore. And that's it. You know, it's like, that's why I kind of like the Romero movies, because Romero always kind of left it off with a downer. Like, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring you.
Well, you know,
it's not over. Like, it's not stopping.
On, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, from Night with Ben dying at the end, where you're like, holy shit, this guy that I loved from the entire movie is now dead, and he's being thrown on a fucking fire. I mean, even with Dawn, like, when they live in the helicopter, like, they're low on gas. They don't know where they're going to go. Like, it was always Romero's best work when he left you just kind of thinking that they're not safe. They're never going to be safe. Like, it doesn't matter where you go. Like, there's problems.
And they never will be, you know, because the fucking dead are still there, you know, and they're not going anywhere. But then on top of it, too, like, you, even when you look at, like, again, to bring it up, Return of the Living Dead, you know, you have that first movie ending with fucking, you know, a nuclear bomb being dropped on the fucking town. You know, like not just a small drone strike. You know what? I get it. We've got newer technology. We can do it this way now. But, like, again, like, it's that bummer ending. That ending of, like, you know what? Ultimately, there are going to be no survivors, because the only way to make sure that this fucking thing was taken care of is by killing everybody that could have possibly been involved.
Yeah. I mean, I love that ending of Return of the Living Dead. Like, it's a fun horror comedy. Like, you're laughing and having a good time. But when that fucking bomb drops at the end, you're like, holy shit. Like, they decimated an entire city. That's how they're going to take care of the zombie plague. Like, they're just going to completely destroy an entire city. And I love it. But as we close out, the Gouet said, we're going to be talking about Late Night with the Devil next week for his pick. I'm excited for it. So as we close out, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Dean, and talking about Festival of the Living Dead. And we'll see you back here next week for some Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one, man.
I think we all are.
And I haven't seen it yet, and I've heard really good things. And I, I plan on really setting the atmosphere for myself for when I watch it. I'm really excited.
Awesome, dude. All right. Ghoul, we know what we're talking about next week, so why don't you go ahead and sign yourself off?
Hey, stay scared, everybody. Stay scared. Have a good night.
All right. And as for me, I'm your old pal, the King of Horror, Andy G. Thank you so much for listening to this episode where we talked about Festival of the Living Dead. Next week, we're going Late Night with the Devil. So as always, hail yourselves, hail Satan, hail Odorous, keep America strong, watch horror movies, and we'll see you back here next week.